everyone, and welcome to minute 43 of season 8 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is DJ Valentine from Simplistic Reviews. Welcome back to the show, DJ.
I'm so happy to be here. I'm pleased as punch. I'm so happy. I'm so happy to delve into World War II once again. I said it overdramatic because it's a Spielberg movie. I don't know why.
Yeah, a little overdramatic, but you know, we leave some leeway here, so that's just fine.
I mean, it's just weird for me to do Saving Private Ryan, but I'm like, I'm so happy. I gotta bring it down.
No, but you can look at it as from the perspective that it is a movie that's very inspirational, you know.
It's inspirational, but I don't want to be clownish when I'm talking about we're going to talk about the Nazis. I don't want to be
No, but you've done skits, you've done comedy skits about it, so.
It's true. But I am dead inside, so I just want to make sure.
Is that what it comes down to?
When I'm traveling from my show to others, I just want to, you know, I don't want to infect your show with my nonsense.
You are not in danger of that at all. Don't worry. Not at all. Not for 1 second. So, minute 43 begins with Caparzo giving Upham a warning and ends with Miller trying to give an answer to Mellish. So, we ended things yesterday with Caparzo basically getting startled and then Upham. By basically saying to him, look, you know, every time you salute to the captain, you're making us all a target. And then he started saying especially, and then he got cut off. And I love his comment here because he basically says to him, he says, especially when I'm standing next to him.
Because he doesn't care. I went
off. he's like, I don't care if you're making Miller a target. Just don't do it when I'm next to him. Yeah.
He's saying, like, I would be sad if the captain died, but I'd be very upset if he died. Bullets are flying past me to get him. Please don't let that happen.
No, he's saying I'd be even more upset if those bullets that were aiming at him get me.
That especially, but don't even make me a risk. Just don't make me a risk of getting shot at any point.
Exactly. That's what it basically comes down to. And, you know, it's ironic that Caparzo is the character who actually says this. Mm-hmm. for anyone who's seen the movie and there's the Corona. That's right.
He was right. He was right to be worried.
That's right. and we see that Upham's reaction is he's basically saying to himself, what the hell is going on here that nobody is being nice to me? You know, he's used to being in a unit where everyone's nice to one another and everyone's talking to each other and everyone's, but here, nope, not even close.
He's the new kid in school.
At this point,
new kid in school, right?
That's
now.
Right. That's right. Everyone else is nice. They're nice to each other, but they're not nice to him.
I believe it's what the line Caparzo is about to say. That is one of the underlying, as many reasons, but probably one of the big reasons. I mean, Giovanni Ribisi asks him, what's your book about? Oh, Brotherhood of.
Right.
And what do you know? What do you know about Brotherhood? Because these guys have probably been in the shit and they probably look at Upham as you're just some fancy schmidt. You've probably been like 500 miles away from a bullet firing.
You're a typewriter guy.
I'm covered in.
You're the
kind
of guy.
Look how clean.
You're the kind of guy that Tom Hanks would like.
You sold Tom Hanks a typewriter. That's who you are.
That's it. Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting because I obviously at this point, Upham knows that he needs to move away from Caparzo, so he moves to the side and almost bumps into Wade. Who's just taking his time. You know, I love the fact that they use the typical trope here that the medic is the guy who's a pacifist.
Right.
You know, he doesn't have a gun. You know, he's just walking along with everyone else, holding his canteen, and then he says to himself, "Corporal, what's your book about?" Now, what's interesting is at what point do you think Upham would have told them that he's writing a book? Because they're all very upset at him, and they don't like this guy. So even if they were, back to what we were talking about yesterday about the Jeep, even if they were in the Jeep and they were, talking about stuff and stuff like that, I don't know if at that point, if it would have come up that he was writing a book, then someone might have asked him at that point, "What kind of book are you writing?"
Yeah, I mean, they could have.
You know, it's a strange segue.
He has the. We talked about this on Monday that he has the pencil. I don't think any of them is carrying one of those things. So if they see him scribbling down stuff, they'd probably be curious. Again, this is a lot of off-camera stuff that we're just filling in the blanks with, but we can assume that maybe they don't really give a crap about Upham, but they see him doing it, and then they'll just eventually lead to. Again, Wade asked. I don't think Carparzo or Ryben or the rest of them, Jackson or Mellish, they probably noticed it but didn't care. But Wade asked, and they just
Right.
overhear. So yeah, they probably all noticed him doing it, but Wade was probably the only one, I'd say kind enough to ask, but just interested enough to ask.
Right. And what's great is he asks him what's his book about, and then if you watch carefully, so Upham then like swings his gun slightly
Love this
in
part.
Wade's direction, and then Wade says, "Hey, watch your
Please
rifle," and pushes it
don't
away
aim
and
in that
goes,
gun at
"Sorry."
my head, please.
I mean, it's pretty funny because I mean, if you look at the way he just basically gets close to him. I've been in situations, where someone has accidentally pointed a loaded gun in my direction, when I was in the army and stuff like that. When you're in training exercises and things like that. What Upham is doing here, he's not pointing the gun at him, but I guess Wade knows that this is a guy who the last time he held a gun was in basic training when he fired the gun.
Right.
That was
He's essentially
it. So
like
he's like,
he's very
just
casual with it. He
keeps
doesn't
it.
like how casual he is with this rifle.
That's right. And so Upham then loses his train of thought a little bit, and he goes, "Sorry." And he goes, "Actually, it's about the." And then he pauses for a second, and he goes, "It's supposed to be about the bonds of brotherhood that develop between soldiers during war." And then Caparzo overhears this, and he starts to mock him, and he goes, "Brotherhood? What do you know about brotherhood?" And
Vin
then
Diesel's
he
mocking
turns around.
family. That's like
That's
what was
right.
going
That's right.
Family? That's bull crap. And then he would learn
That's right.
in the future, it's the only thing there is.
That's right. Family and cars.
Family
That
and
that's all
cars
you
at
got.
a quarter mile at a time. That's all he would care about afterwards.
That's right. And then he turns around to Mellish and goes, "Get a load of this guy, fish."
I never noticed that he calls him that before. I didn't even
This is the second time that he's called him fish. He called him fish when he gave him
the knife. Yeah,
the Hitler Youth knife
yeah,
also. Right. I always thought that the fish is I wasn't sure if it was a nickname or if it was possibly Mellish's first name, because
I thought it was off
it's possible.
the Jewish fish.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. That's right. Because there's a name like Fischl and stuff like that. I mean these aren't names that are really used nowadays, but it would be possible. But it wasn't. It's we actually discussed this a few weeks ago when he called him fish, that it probably just comes from the fact that fish rhymes with Mellish.
Oh, okay.
They were in training together, and Mellish turns into, "Oh, I can't say Mellish. All right, I'm just gonna call you fish." And that'll be it. And then Caparzo keeps chuckling, and he goes, "Hey, why don't you ask the captain where he's from?" And then Mellish chimes in and goes, "Yeah, ask the captain. He'll tell you anything you want to know about him." Which is great. They're really pushing the envelope here. Because as far as they're concerned, they're like, "Stop bothering us, and go bother Miller.
I think they're that
We'll
or they
see."
want to see what happens. They're kind of like, set him up. go ask out Julie Newmar, see what happens with you, and then they'll make her walk. Hey, go ask a girl out and see what this, just to watch, just to see what happens with him, because they've probably all of them have all tried to ask over the years,
right,
and gotten nothing. So.
So, like, well, maybe he'll be successful if he figures out a way to do it.
Or he'll get yelled at, or something bad will happen to him, and that'll entertain us also. Either one.
Yes, that's true. And, I mean, basically what the shot then changes, and, you know, we see the group of these soldiers basically walking up this, I wouldn't say it's a very steep hill, but it is a steep hill. It's a relatively steep hill. And, you know, we see that Ryben is in the front, followed by Miller. And then we got Wade behind him and Mike. And then the rest of the guys are behind them in the back. And at this point, Ryben decides to start asking questions.
Sets up his character perfectly.
And he says, that's right. He says, you want to explain the math of this to me? And, I mean, what's the sense of risking the lives of the eight of us to save one guy? And Miller, I love how Miller is able to multitask, because he then looks down. He's holding like a compass. And he goes, 20 degrees. And he goes, anybody want to answer that? So, like, he's dealing with, you know, making sure that they get where they need to go, but also being a part of this conversation. Like, he doesn't mind. He's not saying, okay, we're in enemy territory, let's be quiet or anything like that. He's like, let's have a whole discussion. anybody want to talk about?
And he's given, like, he's given tactical formation of hand signals throughout the conversation. But at first I thought he was just like joking around, but if you look at him, he keeps relaying information to Mike, who's relaying information to the unit the entire time.
Exactly. Yeah, it's great how they're having this conversation. I mean, basically, Ryben is just going off about the whole thing, and then at this point, Wade chimes in and goes, "Ryben, think about the poor bastard's mother." He goes, "Hey, Doc, I got a mother, all right. I mean, you got a mother. Sarge's got a mother. I mean." I bet even the captain's got a mother. And then he looks over at Miller, and, you know, Miller gives him this like dirty look, and he goes, well, maybe not the captain, but the rest of us got mothers.
I love that look. Tom Hanks, that look that he gives him, it's like it's almost like he's smiling, but he's not. He's kind of like eye smiling at him.
He's like smirking at him.
Yeah, and then he gives the hand signal to fan out. And it's like, he's so locked in this scene. It's so good.
Yeah. And no, it's amazing the way that he does that, the whole thing. You know, he looks like he's having a good time. You know, Miller is having a good time watching this all happen. You know, with the way
it gives
that
us like an impression that this is not this specific conversation, but this is a kind of a conversation or a repartee that they've probably had like 100 times before. So you know how close of a unit this unit is. Like, you know why he picked these men,
right?
You know why he picked these men to go with him, because they there's a familiarity with all of them that's so good,
and they're
it's
alive.
Not like, yes sir, you're captain. It's nothing like that. It's almost like you're I say you're friends, but you know, it's a Fast and the Furious moment.
Yeah. Okay.
This is the Fast and the Furious family. But I think Vin Diesel has been copying this moment from Spielberg for his entire career.
Maybe. Could be. And then we see Upham in the back, and Upham then says, there's not the reason why, there's but to do or die. Now, do you have any idea where this quote comes from?
I'm assuming this, and I've said this many times, by the way, I don't know where it comes from. I would assume some kind of general. Patton, maybe? I'm not sure.
It's from a poem. It's a poem called The Charge of the Light Brigade. But before I get into the poem, I just love the way that Mellish parodies his intonation right after that. You know, he goes, there's not he goes, he's like, and then he goes, what the f*** is that supposed to mean, Corporal? Huh? We're all supposed to die? Is that it? So this is based on a poem called The Charge of the Light Brigade, which was written in 1854 by Alfred Lord Tennyson.
Okay.
Okay. And it was first published on December 9th, 1854, in the Examiner, and it was included in a compilation of poems the following year that he had.
This is, to me, this is the foreshadowing moment of Miller, because it's because Upham is separated from them because, one, he's not a soldier.
He's
In
more
the
of an
specific terms of
intellectual.
battle, he's an intellectual, he's educated, but the person that knows the quote is also educated. So this is the first
Right.
kind of like, oh wait, so.
Correct. So during so the light cavalry brigade suffered great casualties in the Battle of Balaclava. And so Tennyson wrote a poem based on two articles that were published about it, that there was a sentence that said, "The British soldier will do his duty even to certain death, and is not paralyzed by the feeling that he's the victim of some hideous blunder." He basically wrote the poem very quickly, just not long afterwards, because he was looking at that article and basically found a way to do a poem about it. So there are six stanzas to this poem. I'll quickly read it, even though I'm not a poet laureate, "Half a league, half a league, half a league onward, all in the valley of death, rode the 600. Forward, the light brigade, charge for the guns," he said. "Into the valley of death rode the 600." And the second stanza, "Forward, the light brigade, was there a man dismayed? Not through the soldier knew someone had blundered. There's not to make reply, there's not to reason why, there's but to do and die. Into the valley of death rode the 600. Cannon to right of them, cannon to left of them, cannon in front of them, volleyed and thundered, stormed at with shot and shell. Boldly they rode in well. Into the jaws of death, into the mouth of hell rode the 600. Flashed all their sabers bare, flashed as they turned in air, sabering the gunners there, charging an army, while all the world wondered, plunged in the battery smoke, right through the line they broke. Cossack and Russian reeled from the saber stroke, shattered and sundered. Then they rode back, but not the 600. Cannon to right of them, cannon to left of them, cannon behind them, volleyed and thundered, stormed at with shot and shell, while horse and hero fell. They that had fought so well came through the jaws of death, back from the mouth of hell, all that was left of them, left of 600. When can their glory fade? Oh, the wild charge they made. All the world wondered. Honor the charge they made, honor the light brigade, noble 600. So, I mean, obviously there's the idea that you had during the Crimean War, there were 600 soldiers of the light brigade that just charged ahead, even though they knew they didn't have any chance of winning. These are
Right.
cavalrymen and stuff like that. So I liked it. I mean, I liked the way that they even just, like you said, it points out the fact that Miller is he's a teacher. He teaches English
Right.
literature. So just to hear those two lines in the middle of this entire poem, and to be able to recognize it is just great.
This scene, if you just close your eyes and understand that, knowing that who Miller is, it's like a classroom. You got the loudmouth kid, you got the angry kid, you got those overeducated, what's it called, nerdy teacher's pet. It's a classroom. So this again, this whole they keep dropping little hints at what Miller is, and that this right here. The camaraderie, you could see it as a soldier thing, but you could also see how Miller interacts with the soldiers. He's not lecturing. He's essentially answering their questions in the most practical, in educating them, but
He's
not
having an
like,
educated conversation with them.
educated conversation. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So which is great.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, Melis just goes nuts. You know, as I said before, he said, "Well, we're all supposed to die. Is that what you're saying here?" And Miller then interjects and starts to explain what's going on. He goes, "Upham's talking about," and then he gets cut off. So people will have to come back tomorrow to actually hear his response here. But I love your analogy about this. This is like a classroom with the way that the kids are acting. Yeah. I never even thought about that. That's just very interesting. I mean, basically this whole week is the essence of the movie. It's basically telling everybody, you know, telling us while telling these characters why it's so important for them to be doing what they're doing.
Their duty, essentially.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, Miller will say it later on. We do our duty in order to, you know, move on to the next duty that we need to do, and the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And, you know, eventually we'll be done. You know, we have to follow orders.
It's like I'm going to bring it to Star Wars for some reason, but there's a character in the show called Andor, played by Andy Serkis, that is essentially, he's following, and this is more of a darker tone than why he's following orders to Miller, but he follows orders because he wants to believe that if he does it, he will be given his freedom. And I think Miller's kind of that headcanon where, if I do what I'm supposed to do, I'll get to go home. That's essentially what it is. If I follow the orders, he's not out here to try to be Captain America. He's not trying to be the greatest soldier, get promoted, be a court. He just wants to go home. That's it. That is, and that's it. We talked about this Monday, where I just think that's all Miller cares about. He's dancing on a needle in between being Dudley Do Right, you know, Captain America, and being rogue, fly by the seat of his pants Captain. But he's right in the middle of, he just broke it down to, if I get to just do what I'm supposed to do, do my duty for the whatever, for the war, my reward is I get to go home. That's it.
Right. Okay, that's fair. That's all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else you want to talk about with this minute?
I hate Upham still. I'm never going to be a fan of him. You're never going to make me like Upham. No one will ever make me like him. I like everybody else.
Am I trying to make you like him?
No. I'm just talking about the world. The world, Spielberg, Jeremy Davies, even though you're a great actor, I'll never like this character.
Okay. I think that's a fair assessment. It is.
Melis was right.
That's what Melis it comes down right. to.
Hashtag Melis was right.
That's right. Exactly. All right, so every Wednesday we have a segment called World War II Wednesday, where my guests will give their top five World War II movies. So, DJ, why don't you just once again start with your number five and work your way up.
My number five is going to be one that I'm just going to throw it out there because I had the zero expectations on it, and it kind of surprised me in terms of how crazy it is. And a lot of people haven't seen it. It's called Overlord. It stars Kurt Russell's son, Wyatt Russell. He's one of the stars. I forget the other actor. He's another good actor. I'm blanking on his name. If you ever played a video game called Wolfenstein back in the day, this is essentially Wolfenstein the movie. So yeah, watch Overlord. It's fantastic. Great opening sequence. Not as great as the movie we were discussing in terms of the Omaha Beach sequence, but it does have a great plane deployment sequence in the beginning. It's fantastic. So yeah, and it's going to scratch an inch of World War II, but it's also going to scratch an inch of some B-level horror. So go ahead and watch Overlord. That's my number five. My number four, I'm going to say the Dirty Dozen, because it's a classic, and it's got Lee Marvin, it's got Jim Brown, it's got Telly Savalas, Cassavetes. It's fantastic, and it's just good. It's like one of those movies my dad made me watch when I was really, really too young to understand what movies were. But I can tell he was trying to educate me, like, you'll appreciate this when you're older. And I did. My number three is kind of a play up on the Dirty Dozen. I'm going to call it The Inglourious Basterds by Quentin Tarantino. I like to describe this movie as, what if Sherlock Holmes was a Nazi? And that's Christoph Waltz's character. I remember when I was in film school, they showed us the opening scene of Inglourious Basterds and just showed it to us and then broke it down minute by minute. And just Christoph Waltz's performance is fantastic. Brad Pitt's great in it. Eli Roth's good in it. If Eli Roth is good in anything, you know it's pretty good if you haven't seen Inglourious Basterds. This is Daniel Brühl. It's good stuff. And read the script too. A good thing about Quentin Tarantino movies is that you'll get like a great film, and if you read the script, you almost get almost that's not completely different, but you get little nuggets like, oh, that would be cool if it was in there. It's sort of what Rob does all the time. Also, watch
Me? No, come on. He does that a
little bit. What number am I on? Two. Fury. This is the only thing. Well, I would say the only thing. This is one of the greatest things David Ayer has ever done. It's Brad Pitt in 3 and 2 here. I love John Bernthal. He's fantastic. The cast is fantastic. And if you want to talk about a movie about camaraderie and also the hell of what war can do to a person, the dining room scene in Fury is so nerve-wracking. It's so tense. And you're kind of almost just like begging, guys don't. But you, in your mind, you're like, I know why you're this way. And Logan Lerman, it's just a great movie. It's about a tank company going across the battlefield. It's fantastic film. David Ayer has never been, this is the height of David Ayer. David Ayer's done a lot of those. This is the only thing that I can say, this is, you did good here, David. And number one, Saving Private Ryan. It's the greatest war film ever made. I put it up there with anything. It's fantastic. It's fantastic. I love it. I don't know what else to say about it. It's fantastic. We're talking about it right now.
Okay. You don't have to say anything. Enough said, as they say. Enough said. Enough said. Enough said. As Sergeant Rock would say, enough said.
Or Stan Lee. Either one.
I wonder why would Stan Lee and Sergeant Rock say that?
True believer. I could break it down to you, but
Exactly. All right. Excellent. So, DJ, you want to once again tell people where they can find DJ Valentine?
You can find me on Twitter at trying to be DJV. You can find my show, The Simplistic Reviews. My show. It's not my show. I'm just one of the guys on the show. It's Matthew Stewart, Justin Polizzi, and this guy named DJ Valentine who's talking right now. Call Simplistic Reviews podcast where we talk movies and TV and weird other stuff. Make fun of Diddy and Trump and Kamala Harris, and we make fun of everything. We talk about everything and we just have fun with it. So check it out, simplistic.reviews, and just search Simplistic Reviews.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, Earn this.
Oh, no, he doesn't say it like that. That's weird. It'd be weird if he said it like that.
You want to do it again or you want to keep it that way?
No, that's fantastic. he does it like a Vegas show. Right. Earn this.
There you go.